James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Are there any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Thanks for joining us today here in the Head On Radio Network. I'm happy and pleased that you decided to join us today. We've got a lot to talk about. We got a great guest coming up around the bottom of this hour, a gentleman by the name of Richard C. Cook. He's an author. He's a former federal government analyst. Going to talk about his latest article called The Crashing U.S. Economy Held Hostage. Our economy is on an artificial life support system. I think you will find this fascinating and germane to every single one of us. It's a topic on the that will affect each and every one of us, the U.S. economy, the world economy, banking and so forth. It's not going to be a dry conversation with nothing but numbers, so don't worry about that. It will be a fascinating conversation. That's going to come along about over the bottom of the hour. Of course, as always, you can join us here on the Guy James Show by giving us a call at 866-546-5254. If you have a comment on something we're talking about today, we'd be glad to talk to you. And if you have minutes to spare on your cell or home phone, you can give us a call at 941-876-6896. Love to hear from you on either of those lines and hear what you think about what we have to say today. I'm tired today, I'm sleepy today, I'm ouchy, grouchy, and all that sort today because I didn't get a lot of sleep last night. No, I didn't. And whilst I was up, I ended up watching much of the debate, so-called debate that went on last night on the Senate floor. And the poor, poor, poor senators had to stay up all night, many of them. Of course, many of them slept half the night. There were very few in the chamber. Some of them, I hear, actually went home and got a few winks during the night. So don't feel too badly for them. They didn't suffer mightily, if you know what I mean. They are, after all, the princes and princesses of our society, the U.S. senators. That's the way they see themselves. As the American royalty, they treat themselves as American royalty, and I'm afraid all too many of us treat them as royalty as well. Instead of treating them as our public servants, as folks who work for us, as folks who are paid by us, many people look at these people as, oh, somebody oh so special. And what they say is gospel, and what they decide is, it's just not arguable when they decide something. Well, it turns out there's a lot of argument going on in the Senate floor right now. Last night, debating whether or not to pull troops out of Iraq. Of course, the Republicans invoking age-old rule about saying that we needed a majority of 60 votes on an important issue like this. They invoked that old rule, and so we never had a chance on that. The Democrats didn't. It ended up, what was it, 52-47, I think it was. Of course, you know where Joe Lieberman voted. But we weren't about to get 60 votes. I don't know why, other than to pacify some of us on the left. I don't know why Harry Reid even tried this. He finally had to take a stand on something. I guess this was it. Finally had to draw a line in the sand, and he figured, well, what the hell? I might as well do it now. Maybe this will shut him up for a while. I really think that's the attitude they had. It's inconceivable to me to watch Republicans get up and speak on the Senate floor and be completely in agreement with one another that they will not cut back on the troops that are in Iraq. They will not, under any circumstances, they will protect Junior Bush and his minions no matter what. Here we've had many of them speak out. Voinovich most recently. Who else? Several of them have spoken out. Lugar have spoken out and said that they disagreed with the president, but when push comes to shove, when they get down to the nitty-gritty, they go right back to falling in line and marching in lockstep with Mr. McConnell and the President of the United States, Mr. Junior Bush, and going along like good little Republicans, just like they're supposed to. Can anybody explain this to me? Facing the political jeopardy that they're in at the moment, the troubling times many of them are in for, in re-election campaigns come next year. I am really having a hard time understanding this. I really am. And I did. I stayed up last night to watch most of the Senate debate about the war. And while there were some interesting and some passionate comments made by the senators from both sides of the aisle in the middle of the night, I really did come to the, I suppose you could call it an inescapable conclusion about the whole thing. The war will not. It will not be stopped by a debate in the Senate or in the House. The war will not be stopped by protest from the citizens. There is nothing but political theater going on, and it's wasting American lives and treasure, to say nothing of the decimation of our military resources and our tax money. And why is it a waste of time to have all-night filibusters like last night? Because George W. Bush, Junior George W. Bush, and his puppet masters have no intentions, and I think everybody better get that through their minds and accept the fact that they have no intentions whatsoever of bringing a halt to this war. That is the last thing on their minds. They will not do it under any circumstances. Stop and think about it. If he were wavering on the subject, there might be cause for some political compromises to take place and come to some sort of a reasonable meeting of the minds over the whole thing. But that simply is not the case. Yes, I am happy, along with many of you, I am sure. I'm happy that the Democrats finally had the spine to call the bluff of the Republicans in the Senate. But as you will see, it will have no effect whatsoever on the final outcome of this. None. Unless you think Bush and his people are of a mind to back down, please consider some of these facts. Recently, George Bush claimed that, and you heard him say it, and let me quote him, he said, "The same folks that are bombing innocent people in Iraq were the ones who attacked us in America on September the 11th. And that's why what happens in Iraq matters to the security here at home." Georgie Bush said that, end quote. The second fact I have to give you is that the mainstream media and all the right-wing pundits are, and talking heads, all of them, they're aided and abetted by the White House and the Pentagon briefings are more and more referring to terrorists in Iraq as Al-Qaeda. You've heard it over and over and over again. Anybody that picks up an arm or arms or weapons in Iraq or throws rocks at our soldiers or causes any trouble there now, they're all labeled as Al-Qaeda. They're not differentiating between the various insurgent or terrorist groups, even the sectarian groups. Everybody now's Al-Qaeda. Although we know that a very small percentage, somewhere around 10%, maybe less, are actually Al-Qaeda, of the people causing the trouble. Everybody, according to the Bush administration, is Al-Qaeda. Part of their propaganda campaign. We know there's information in a draft national intelligence estimate that was leaked to the press with its conclusions that the Osama bin Laden variety Al-Qaeda has gained strength over the past year and has become more of a threat to the West and toward making the Middle East more unstable. And this is very unfortunate for the Bush administration, by the way. Which really, what it really says is the Bush efforts so far in this whole thing haven't done a damn thing to thwart the efforts of Al-Qaeda or the terrorists. Nothing. Another reason that I don't think they'll back down, the man recently thrown out of office by his constituents, Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, recently went on a right-wing radio show and predicted that unless Bush's Iraq policies are carried forward, there would likely be terrorist attacks on the U.S. And believe me, they're hoping to God that there are attacks on the U.S., just like they said back when the PNAC group said what we needed was another Pearl Harbor-type event in this country. You better believe that the right is hoping for another one now. Believe it. It is true. We had Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff telling a major newspaper's editorial board last week, and then, of course, it got widely reported, as we knew it would, that he had a, quote, gut feeling about this new period of increased risk of terrorist attacks on the U.S. this summer. Very vague, and they always are, his sky is falling story about an Al-Qaeda cell. Do you think for one moment that all of these things having been recently orchestrated has anything to do with Republican senators withdrawing their support for the Iraq war? Truly conservative newspaper editorials calling for us to withdraw from Iraq, and you've got a president up to his eyeballs in scandal. And just some of the things that are involved in the scandals of botched war, the firing of the 8 U.S. attorneys, the CIA leak case with Valerie Plame Wilson, the warrantless wiretapping, operating foreign prisons and torture camps, and the commutation of Scooter's sentence. Do you suppose that it could be that Bush and Santorum and Chertoff and whoever leaked the NIE estimate early and more are trying to scare the crap out of the Americans to kind of rally some support for the president and his Iraq thing and his domestic spying activities? Do you think that could be in the realm of possibility? Do you suppose that this is a repeat of the past behavior of the Bush administration? Remember, about him scaring the country into going to war against Iraq by telling us that they had these mobile bioweapons labs and posted all those orange terrorism warnings practically every week in the weeks and months leading up to the presidential election. You remember that. We had one every week with only about one warning following the election. Once it was over with, things were fine. We didn't have any more warnings after that. I think we had one in May of 2005. But do you suppose that this is some sort of a renewed effort by these thugs in power to scare hell out of the American public and make it easier to achieve their goals in the Middle East and here at home? Well, I am a betting man, and I'm betting that that's exactly what it's all about. I'm not saying there isn't reason to be concerned about radical Muslims. I'm not saying they don't pose a threat to us at all. And I'm not saying that radical Muslims were not responsible for 9/11 and other terrible, horrifying acts all around the world during the past 20 years. I am not saying that. What I am saying is that this administration is actively engaged in a massive fear-mongering program in order to maintain their political power. They don't give a goddamn about the safety of the peoples of the United States and the rest of the world. Let me be perfectly clear about that. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows that. They have the American people right where they want them, both politically and economically, and they're doing it through fear and intimidation and repression. It's that simple. That's why I think last night's show in the Senate floor was most likely a waste of time. It will achieve nothing because this administration will not back down in the face of any actions by the House or the Senate. I think they've made that crystal clear, and we should all realize that by now. Which brings me to my main point. None of this matters because there are only two actions that will put a stop to this madness, and the Democrats have been too damned cowardly or timid to try either one of them as of yet. Yes, there are two methods of stopping this. Both of them are possible, and both of them should be used. Number one, we should defund this war. When the temporary funding bill runs out, simply refrain from sending another one to the White House. That will force a stop to this madness if the Democrats have the guts to do it. Bush cannot overcome the lack of funding for his adventure in the Middle East. There is nothing that he can do about that. It's the simplest solution, really, but it's not enough to end the whole debacle. Impeachment. Impeachment has to be done to show the American public that defunding the war was the proper course of action. Follow me on this. If we defund the war, we must impeach George W. Bush to prove to everybody that defunding the war was the right course of action. Because once the public is made aware of the actual crimes and all the transgressions of this administration in a public impeachment trial, then, if the media does their job, then the public will finally realize that we've been had by these guys. Once the truth comes out in testimony in an impeachment proceeding, the awful truth will rise to the surface, and most of even the most ardent supporters of this criminal gang occupying the White House at the moment will drop by the wayside. The question is, do the Democrats have the political courage to do it? Well, it may not matter. Because although I don't think public pressure can do anything to sway Bush and his people from their position on this disastrous war, I do think that the United States Senate can be persuaded by the people to finally do the right thing. They all need to be reminded about what happened to one of their, according to one of them, one of their best and brightest senators, and I'm talking about the esteemed Ricky Santorum. They need to be reminded that here was a guy who, as far as he was concerned and as far as they were concerned, was completely safe as safe can be. And he was thrown out of office on his ass because of this war. And Arlen Specter can get up like he did today and say that he knows more about his state than Harry Reid and everybody else. And no one else has got a right to say anything about Pennsylvania, if you heard that asinine rant of Arlen Specter today complaining about how he was treated about Harry Reid on the floor of the United States Senate. Well, Ricky Santorum thought he knew about the state of Pennsylvania as well. And so did the leaders of the Republican Party think they knew what was going on. And he got thrown out on his ass. And it can happen to others, and it will happen to others. That is how we get the Senate to defund the war and impeach Junior Bush. So let's not waste our time trying to persuade Bush and his gang to do anything. Forget that. We are not going to persuade Junior Bush Dick Cheney, the whole goddamn gang in the White House. We're not going to persuade a single one of them to do anything as far as the wishes of the American public. It will not happen. They don't have to get reelected, and they just don't give a damn about being accountable to the people because they know they don't have to be accountable. And they don't have to be loyal to their party either because, truth be told, this Bush gang was never about being Republicans, but rather about being Bushites, and that is all. They only ever cared about themselves and not another damn thing in this country. So let's work on our senators. All of them, both Republican and Democrat, and let them know we're out of patience with this war and we are holding them, Republicans and Democrats, accountable from now on, and it's they who will pay the political price for not bringing the war to an end. Let's keep at it. Let's be honest here. By forcing this little show last night, we have found that we do have some influence on them. Let's face it. That all-night debate would not have happened, absolutely would not have happened, if there had not been some political pressure to bear by you and I. It can work. It will work. It must work. And believe me, it will if we stay at it, you and I. Every phone call, every email, every comment makes a difference in this. And we proved that last night. That was a charade last night, in my opinion. It meant nothing. But what it did prove to me is that the voters finally have shown that they have an influence on these people because Harry Reid, there is no way Harry Reid would have done that last night without intense political pressure being put on him by you and I. Not a chance. So that's the answer. Defund the war, and after defunding the war, then impeach Bush and justifying it to the American people through an impeachment trial. Don't waste our time trying to convince Junior Bush and his people of anything. It's a waste of time. Work on the Senate. Work on the House. Work on them today, tomorrow, the next day, and every day. Do not let up for a moment. Keep the pressure on these people. They will respond to it. There's only one thing that politicians really respond to now. Only one thing. And that's the fear of getting their asses thrown out of office, that they'd rather face grim death than get thrown out of office. You know they would. They're treated like princes and princesses and kings and queens when they're in those halls of Congress, and they do not want to leave there under any circumstances. It's that great being there. Don't let any of them kid you. Don't let any of them tell you it's anything else. It is a fantastic job and position to hold. And they don't want to lose it, even the rich ones. They don't want to lose it under any circumstances. So that's the key to this whole thing. We can't threaten George Bush. We can't threaten to throw him out of office or Cheney off. We can't. But we can threaten the Congress of the United States to do what we need them to do. That is what we must do. I think you'll all agree. 866-546-5254. Let's head on over to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, listen, I'm Sandra. I'm calling from California. You know, the thing that's interesting about this is that these people have to be impeached because using the next person, no matter what party they are, they're not going to embrace these powers and further run this country to a totalitarian nightmare. I mean, he has to go. There's a impeachment is all through the Constitution. This is our remedy. It's not if, and, or but, or off the table. This has to happen, or this democracy is over.
I completely agree.
I mean, I don't understand the sort of, I talk to people, they're like, huh, duh. I'm like, take a damn course, you know, get educated. And that's what I worry, is that people are so stupid, I'm sorry, they don't have a clue that this is not a crisis. This is like, if we don't impeach them, the next person will just extend the repression. No one gives up power.
No.
I mean, Madison said this. And if there was a war, the president would maximize his power. I mean, this is his worst nightmare. I'm sure Madison is spinning around.
You got it.
I don't, you know, I just am sort of, I'm glad to hear you talking. I'm like, you know, I'm stunned. I'm glad they were there all night just as a symbol, because it shows, like you said, that something's going on, because these people wouldn't be doing this.
They didn't want to do it. Believe me, they didn't want to do it. There was pressure put on them to do it.
And you're absolutely right about the position that they're in. People don't understand what sort of wonderful job they have. I agree with you. And they can be thrown out.
Well, we proved that the last election, some of them that weren't expecting to be thrown out were, and I think there are definitely some of them looking over their shoulder right now. If they're not looking over their shoulder concerning the D.C. Madam scandal that's still going on, they're certainly looking over their shoulders about what could happen to them in the next election. They're just hoping we forget all this by the time the next election comes around.
Yeah, not only that, but I mean, there's conservatives. I'm not, trust me. I am, like, not a conservative, but there's conservatives who are, like, freaking out because they know how the Constitution is set up, that this man is beyond and far away taking these sort of monastic powers. And it's just sort of like, wake the hell up. You know, I just think people are so, I don't know what they're doing. You tell me, what are they doing?
Well, you've made a good point, because even a conservative, a good conservative, and I have respect for their views if they're rational about them, and we have an open discourse about it, but even a good, solid conservative has got to be thinking, oh, my God, if we give the executive branch this much power, if they're granted this much power, what if somebody we hate, like Hillary Clinton, for example, gets in office? What are we going to do? Conservatives got to be thinking that.
Well, no, and it's just absurd because, you know, like I say, I have a lot of issues with this country. You know, I'm like a person of color. But one thing I do know is that these people who wrote the Constitution, they kind of saw a lot, you know. And as far as I can tell, what's going on now is just exactly what they put the impeachment in the Constitution for. Because these people are establishing a situation in this country that once we embark on it, you know, we're not going to come back, because people never give up power.
Oh, that's right. And as far as the framers that you're talking about, you're doggone right. They had a good grasp of what ought to be done, because they'd seen it already. They'd broken away from the tyranny of having a king and somebody lord over them, and they knew full well what could happen. And that's why all these safeguards were built into the Constitution.
Yeah, and it says it six times in the Constitution, the word impeachment. There is no, it's not obscure, there is no, interpretation involved. It said you can impeach when this situation arises. I'm just, like, flabbergasted that the media, or if it's corporations, I don't know what's stopping the information from getting out, but we're in a serious situation here, and I'm glad your network is on, but, you know, I'm really worried to the point where I'm glad I have my passport. I'm sorry. I just think that, you know, the S is about to hit the fan, and these people will not give up power. I think that if Bush had a way of extending his stay, he would.
Oh, absolutely.
We need to be prepared for a war in Iran or whatever madness is in this religious Taliban's mind.
You're exactly right. I couldn't agree more.
Anyway, I won't go on.
Hey, thanks for your call. A great call. Good to hear from you. You definitely know what's going on. Keep abreast of it. I know you will, and call us again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Great call. We're going to pause for a quick break. We'll get our guest on the phone. We'll be right back.
Mother Nature's son, all day long
Welcome back, everybody, to the Guy James Show. We're awfully glad to have all of you along with us here this afternoon. And as promised right now, I'm very happy to introduce you to a gentleman by the name of Richard Cook. He's a former federal government analyst who was one of the key figures in the investigation. I know you all remember about the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster, the Morton Thiokol thing and all that. He's an author, currently working on some more writings. And what really piqued my interest was the latest article that he had on Global Research called "The Crashing U.S. Economy Held Hostage. Our Economy is on an Artificial Life Support System." Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
I've been looking forward to having you on. I read your latest article on Global Research, and I don't know if it's published elsewhere as well. It was an extremely riveting and interesting article, yet is also at the same time extremely distressing. You couldn't have had a good feeling while writing it. And the title, as I already mentioned to our listeners, gives us all pause for concern about the not just the U.S. economy, but the world economy. What got you going on this subject?
Well, after I left NASA, shortly after the Challenger disaster back in 1986, I worked at the U.S. Treasury Department for over 20 years. Now, I was involved in various government financial programs and issues all the way through my career, including a couple years I spent working in the Jimmy Carter White House. And I spent much of my time at Treasury doing analytical work, of course, on various Treasury programs, but also researching the history of the United States economy and the United States monetary system. I had taught history in the past, and I also developed some training programs at Treasury which covered the history of U.S. currency, and found it just to be a fascinating topic. So I became kind of a specialist over the years on monetary policy and on currency. And when I retired, well, the first thing I did was to publish my Challenger book, because that was in the works and that was ready to come out. But then I immediately began to turn to the monetary and economic field. And starting in January and going up through just a couple weeks ago, I published a series of articles mainly on the Global Research site. And they've been picked up and carried around the world. I've had them published now in India. I just got translations over the internet from in Italian, Spanish, Polish. It's provoked a tremendous interest, because what I am doing is I'm trying to come at the economic issues of the day through a monetary standpoint. And I do it through an analysis of the Federal Reserve System as we've inherited it over the years, and concluded that we have some very serious monetary issues. I also work with monetary reformers who are putting together proposals in various places, and have my own series of monetary reform proposals that I'm also putting out on the internet. So I'm trying to tackle the whole world economic situation from the monetary standpoint.
Well, Richard, as everybody knows, we've had troubling economic times in the past in this country. We had the great crash of 1929. We've had the Depression. We've had a recession or two, several recessions. Do you think the economic signals over the long run have ever been as pronounced as they are right now, heading toward like a runaway train heading down the mountain? Do you think we've ever had this much time to mull it over and see it coming before?
Well, probably not. There's a tremendous amount of information out there about what is going on, and there's some pretty dire warnings. I mean, if you take a look, for example, at the Bank for International Settlements, which is called the central bank to the central banks, even they're warning that the current economy is way overextended. And the main problem is that it's overloaded with such a tremendous amount of debt at all levels. It's debt that can never be paid off. Now, how that will play out is hard to say. There's no expert, really, who can tell you exactly when it's going to happen and what's going to happen, but we're looking at a serious deflation of the world economy. Now, I do want to point out, and this has come up in a couple conversations I've had previously, the United States really has two economies. The first economy is the one that we call the producing economy, and that's where people go to work, make things, produce goods and services, and buy and sell in the marketplace. The second is the financial economy, and that includes the financial industry, includes the insurance industry because of the tremendous amount of resources that they control. It includes the real estate industry because real estate is the biggest asset in the United States today and has seen the biggest asset inflation over the last 10 to 15 years. So we've really got two economies. Now, on the side of the producing economy has been in a recession for a year. And the way you measure that is you look at M1. M1 is the amount of ready cash that people have in checking accounts, in now accounts, or in the cash that's available just on a day-to-day basis. M1 has declined in 11 of the last 12 months. That means that there's not a growth in purchasing power to keep up with the rest of the economy, which is in a heavily inflated mode, because the financial economy has tremendous amounts of liquidity out there that's coming out of banks through lending for things like leverage mergers, buyouts, the familiar things, but also tremendous leveraging of equity purchases, of hedge funds, and of derivative funds. That's the runaway freight train. And we've already seen the bubble burst on the housing bubble. We're now seeing, and even The Economist is warning of this, the most conservative publication out there, that the financial bubble that's floated the stock market, the bond markets, the equity, hedge, and derivative funds, that too is reaching the danger point.
Well, explain to folks, sometimes I think, well, they think, well, just the banks and the savings and loans are having a problem because of the collapsing housing market and so forth, but the hedge funds are also connected to that, are they not?
Yeah, that's right. And this is because of the way that the financial industry was deregulated, and the deregulation goes way back, starting with the Carter administration and then really picking up steam with the Reagan administration. And what it did was that it put the banks in the housing business, in the mortgage business. And then Wall Street got into the game because what happens is as mortgages are written and home equity loans are written, the companies that finance these, you know, the mortgage banks or other types of banks, don't keep the loan in their system. They sell that loan. And there are whole agencies that have been created to purchase loans and manage them, like Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Sally Mae does it for student loans. And those are insured, and they give a certain amount of protection to the public by holding those mortgages and allowing people to buy houses. But what began to happen in the 90s, and particularly when the housing bubble began around 2001, was that it became easier and easier for people to get mortgages, and a lot of people began to get mortgages who under the old rules wouldn't be allowed to. In fact, you even have fraudulent writing of mortgages starting heavily around 2001. Where numbers were just made up to allow people to get mortgages. Now, these were all packaged by the banks and then sold through Wall Street into various kinds of funds. Pension funds have bought them. Hedge funds have bought them. In fact, if you've got a 401k, chances are that you own some housing stocks in there based upon either subprime mortgages or even some mainstream mortgages, which are now starting to look shaky. So the danger is that these tremendous numbers of mortgages that were written to float the housing bubble have put the entire stock and bond market at jeopardy.
I live in an area where this is well, very, it was very prolific. It's a huge housing market here in Southwest Florida where the show originates. And, you know, a big building boom going on for the last 6-7 years or so. And, I think everybody knew about a lot of the loans that were being given that should not have been. Places overpriced and sold, and the equity being borrowed. And isn't that part of, you mentioned that 1 year, you've seen this coming for a year, but haven't people been living off the average Joe, lunch bucket Joe that I call him, haven't they been living off the equity of their homes for some time now?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It goes back really 10, 15, 20 years. And we need to look at the reason for the housing bubble, and if I could,
sure,
go into a little bit of history.
Please do.
On how we got there. We came. Let me go back all the way to World War II. I'm 60 years old, so I was part of the baby boom, and I grew up in the 1950s, and what at that time was the greatest producing economy in world history. I mean, it was a tremendous economic powerhouse. Our steel industry was tops in the world. Even our petroleum industry was very strong at that time. And that whole economy lasted us pretty much into the 1960s. And then as the other countries around the world who had been devastated in World War II began to get back on their feet, and we had a lot more competition overseas for our production, we began to slip behind, and we began to fall into a balance of payments deficit. That took us into the 1970s. And in the 1970s, a major change took place in monetary policy in the United States. Most people aren't aware of how that happened, but most people have heard the term monetarism. Monetarism is a word that indicates the type of monetary and economic policy that was put into place in the 1970s, where essentially the banking system through the Federal Reserve was given the primary responsibility for regulating the money supply. Now, they did not do that very well, because when Nixon went off the gold window in 1971 and we no longer use gold in international trade, it opened the doors to inflation, and that's where we got the inflation of the 1970s, including what's known as the petrodollar. That's when Saudi Arabia and the other OPEC nations agreed with the U.S. administration to denominate oil sales in dollars. So that's when the dollar boom began, and a lot of those dollars came back into the United States as purchases of United States real estate. So really the first real estate bubble took place in the late 1970s. I remember I bought a house in 72 for about $30,000, sold it in 79 or 80 for $60,000. So you had 100% inflation in less than a decade. Well, the Federal Reserve said that has to stop. And they took the economy down in 1979 to 1983, with interest rates of over 20%. Now, that didn't just stop inflation, particularly the housing bubble inflation. It wrecked the U.S. economy. Our steel output fell by 50%. That was the beginning of the Rust Belt. It was a devastating event for the U.S. economy. And the way they decided to compensate for that was to open the floodgates to even more monetary inflation through the deregulation that I mentioned earlier. And that's when you had this huge boom in leverage buyouts, mergers, acquisitions, that sort of thing. You had a lot of money coming in from overseas, particularly from Japan, because they were doing very well on their consumer economy, on their consumer exports. You had a lot of money coming in from Britain, from Europe. And that carried us all the way through the 90s, through the Clinton years. And that's really what fueled the dot-com bubble. It was the strong dollar, and it was the overseas investment. It collapsed. It collapsed in the recession of 2000 to 2002, bringing us over into the Bush administration. Now, by that time, the U.S. economy not only had tanked because of high cost of money, that's when we started shipping so many of our jobs overseas. That's when the big outsourcing began, particularly, as we know, painfully today, to China. And those trends accelerated when the Bush administration came in. Now, at that time, We'd lost our heavy industry. We were exporting jobs. Even our technical jobs in the IT area were going overseas. The dot-com bubble had burst, and so the internet industries were starting to shake out. We had no economic driver left. We didn't have any. You know, the space program was long in the past. That was the big one of the big economic drivers of the 60s. So what did the Federal Reserve do? Well, the Federal Reserve, being basically monetarists, not planners, you know, not economic planners the way they were back in Roosevelt days, they decided we needed another bubble. Now, they may not have sat down at the table and said that, but that's what they did. And around 2001, 2002, Greenspan began to come into the White House. Bush cut taxes, ramped up military spending for the first the Afghan War and then the Iraq War. And to accommodate him, the Federal Reserve created the housing bubble. And that pumped enough liquidity into the consumer economy to keep, as you say, the average person spending. But now all of those pigeons have come home to roost. And we're losing very, very quickly our, you know, what's left of our producing economy. It's a very serious situation.
Well, everybody and his brother, after getting a thousand propositions in the mail and by telephone to refinance their houses, went out and did so. If they owed $200,000 on their house, they've got them borrowed up to $200,000 now, and all of a sudden the values have dropped to $150,000. And we've got a people in a world of hurt.
That's right.
I see that every day here. And, of course, foreclosures are going crazy all around the country, particularly in Ohio and Florida and California. And I'm trying to think of the other one. Texas, I think, are the responsible. Those four are responsible for 50% of them. You mentioned deregulation a little bit earlier as being one of the cogs in this thing changed this economy so much. Was the deregulation by our government an honest effort to help things for the American people and the American consumer, or was it something done by design, do you think, to transfer the wealth?
Well, I think it was some of both. I think there were people, and if you go back and you look at the history of the time and some of the things that were written, for example, about supply-side economics, which was probably one of the biggest busts in economic history. There were people who, you got to give some slack, I suppose, to people who really seemed to believe that this was going to help. But on the other hand, I think there were plenty of people in Wall Street, maybe in the government, certain places, kind of rubbing their hands together saying, oh boy, you know, it's coming our way. We're going to get what we can out of it. That's happening today. In one of my articles, I cite a memo, and this memo has actually been printed on the internet. As Dave Barry would say, I'm not just making this up. I've seen the memo, where the head of Carlyle, the equity investment firm that the Bush family is connected with, actually sent out a memo to his manager saying the buying opportunity of a lifetime is coming. Mm. So, yeah, they're rubbing their hands together.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to ask you about, something coming. Somewhere in your article, I can't locate it right at the moment, but you mentioned that that we're very likely to see some, I think as you put it, major financial shocks within the next few months. How few a month, and what kind of shocks are you talking about?
Well, again, it's I'm not a prophet, and neither is anyone else out there. If you read, I'm going to be a little bit roundabout by way of saying I don't know, but if you read somebody like Dr. Michael Hudson, who's probably the top monetary economist in the world today, who's saying essentially the same things I am. In fact, I use quotations from Dr. Hudson in some of the things that I've written. The system is so opaque, you don't really know where the money is. Like, you've got these multi-trillion-dollar hedge funds, for example, that are unregulated. They're not required to publish any statistics. And you don't know what's going to happen and exactly when it's going to happen. Certainly, the stock market is vulnerable. You know, they say it's at a record level. It really isn't. It's about the same level it was in 2000 when you adjust for inflation. But the stock market, with all of the soft housing stocks in it, are very, very vulnerable. If people start losing enough money and they stop spending and charging the money, that will begin to bring the consumer economy down, and that will begin to bring stock prices down. So the stock market is vulnerable. Housing is vulnerable. People who are seeing the equity in their homes plunge and they're getting themselves in a negative equity position, they're vulnerable. Now, the government and the Federal Reserve are trying to produce what is called a soft landing. And what that means is that your neighbor may go broke, but you won't go broke. You know, it won't all come down at once. It'll come down selectively, and then maybe there's a way that they can give that neighbor, you know, job training or something to get him back on his feet while the next guy's coming down. This is a recession. As I said, we are now in a recession on the level of the producing economy. If there's going to be a system-wide collapse, what that means, it means tremendous default. Right now, the U.S. economy is carrying a cumulative debt load of about $45 trillion. That's almost four times the entire production of the U.S., the GDP, for 1 year. How, it's like an overinflated tire. You know, does the tire burst, or do people let the air out slowly? But the system right now is coming down, and it's hurting individuals. And as you've indicated, there are places where it's hurting more than others. I mean, I saw a TV program where whole neighborhoods of places like Atlanta and Cleveland are boarded up.
Yes.
Now, because of the foreclosures. On the other hand, there are places that may remain prosperous, like New York City is still seeing inflation in its housing market because so many rich people live there, so many people who are protected. You know, you've got an economy where the people in the top 15 to 20 to 25% are pretty well off. The 75% down below are not, and they're the ones that are hurting the most. So the situation right now is very selective in terms of where it's striking. Whether it will remain selective or not, nobody knows.
Well, you mentioned a soft landing, and your neighbor may go broke, but you may not. The trouble is, people of my political persuasion see our neighbors as part of our family, and we have to help take care of them one way or another. So it's going to be a tough thing for that 75%. I think you just mentioned are the people in the upper echelon of society these days of the financial stratosphere are they vulnerable to this?
Yes, they are, because all of their wealth is paper. Mm-hmm. You know, it all rests somewhere down the line on somebody doing a job, somebody in a factory making something, or somebody performing a service. Their wealth is paper, and their wealth can disappear very rapidly. I mean, like these two Bear Stearns hedge funds that went down, there's some very unhappy investors. Those are big investors, institutional investors. You may have, for example, the San Diego public school system is heavily invested in hedge funds, I understand. Apologies if they're not, but that's what I've heard. Yeah, they're very vulnerable.
And many, many retirement funds for average Joe across the country will have financial trouble because they're, like you say, invested in these hedge funds and other funds that could go broke. So people may lose their retirement, thus everything they've worked for.
Yeah, that's one of my biggest concerns. No, I'm with you. My concern is for everybody, all the people who are threatened by this. And retirees are threatened just about more than anybody, because particularly the ones who are still locked in to a 401k where their fund managers were actually told they have to buy these subprime stocks and they can't get out of it. I mean, with the dot-com burst in 2002, a lot of retirees lost their pensions, and of course, a good example of that, or a bad example, was Enron, where people who were invested in Enron lost everything, and we could see a lot of Enrons. Another group that I'm very concerned about are students, because student lending these days is off the charts, and even Congress has recognized that. You've got kids coming out of college that owe $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $80,000. Now, when the bankruptcy law was rewritten 2 years ago, student loans were exempted from bankruptcy. They can't even get out of those if they declare bankruptcy. Some of those kids, particularly in the job market that we're in, are tremendously vulnerable.
know one right now that graduated summa cum laude from college, a tremendous prospect for a job, having trouble finding one, having student loans, and wondering about how to pay them back. It's going to be a problem for many. One of my listeners has asked me to ask you about international market funds. What do you know about international market funds?
Well, you have to say just off the top of your head that there are some international market funds, or another type of fund is international currency bond funds, would appear to be in better shape and more secure than American funds at this time. But on the other hand, so much of the world economy is dependent upon the willingness of the U.S. consumer to continue to go into debt, that you have to wonder what is really and truly safe. What I tell people, and I'm asked all the time for investment advice, and what I tell them is, you've just got to get a really good investment advisor and do an item-by-item review of your portfolio and be very conservative at this time about any decisions that you make. But on the other hand, my interest really is in reform. So I know people are vulnerable. I'm very concerned about that. But I also feel there are things that we can do and begin to look at to change the monetary system. I'm a monetary reformer, and one of the things I've done in my articles, and if I could just put a little plug in.
Please do.
They're all available on Global Research. Just go to Google Global Research. I've got a whole series of articles that have come out since January that go into my reform recommendations. And also, you can read some of them on my website, which is www.richardccook.com. That also has information about my book, Challenger Revealed. But we've got to go back in time now and reclaim our entire monetary system. We can do that. There are ways to do it, but it would require a very big sea change in this country and in the world, from a system that's based primarily on debt-created money, and on control of the world economy and monetary system by the banks, to what I call democratic control by popularly elected governments, like we think we have and should have in the United States. That's what got us out of the Great Depression. It was when the government more or less nationalized credit. They didn't nationalize industry, but they took over credit. And it was credit, public control of credit, that built the New Deal and took us into the 1950s and 60s. We've lost that, and that's what we've got to get back to.
I know you're heavily booked for interviews right now. Do you have just a few more minutes?
Yes.
We have. I've got many things that I would like to ask you about. You gave it away earlier that obviously you and I are about the same age and grew up about the same time in this country, a couple of boomers here. You know the old saying, when we were growing up, as General Motors goes, so goes America. And something you alluded to just a moment ago, it is pretty much, isn't it, that as America goes, so goes the world economy, that we're that much of the big dog on the porch that everybody looks to us, maybe not as the strongest economy in the world now, but, the world depends on our economy, do they not?
Well, that's certainly true, and it goes deeper than a lot of people think. You know, I mentioned the fact that we're such a big consumer, and of course we are, and that's important because so many other countries sell their products to us. But it goes even deeper because of the position of the dollar as the world reserve currency. Now, this is something that people hear about, but you don't really see a lot of discussion of. We inherited this status from the British. The British pound, all the way up until the 1930s, was the world reserve currency. That meant that you could buy and sell anything anywhere in the world using the British pound. And so naturally, that made the British pounds a good thing to have. And so that really was the mainstay of the British economy. And if you want to ask, well, what made the British Empire an empire, it was the British pound and the strength of the pound, and particularly when it was backed by gold, and it was backed by gold until 1931. Now, in 1931, Britain had come through a depression, and it had never gotten its economy back up and running since World War One, and it went off the gold standard, and that produced so much chaos in the world economy, that was the real trigger for the Great Depression. You know, we had the 1929 stock market crash, but we were coming out of that. But when Britain went off the gold standard in 31, and people began to hoard gold around the world because of fear of not having a standard anymore, that's what pulled the rug out from under the U.S. dollar. And the U.S. dollar crashed because we had to contract our currency because so much gold was moving out of the United States. Well, the chaos that resulted in a large part in World War II. I have characterized World War II as a monetary war or as a gold war. And, you know, if we had a few hours, we could go through the whole history of that. But that's how critical these macro monetary issues really are. Now, we became the world's banker after World War II. This was after the Bretton Woods agreements. That's why the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund were set up, so that the dollar could then replace the pound, which had evaporated, as the world reserve currency. This continued, well, it's continued up until today, but the real turning point came in 1971 when Nixon went off the international gold standard, and that allowed an unlimited expansion of dollars through the oil purchases that we were making from the Middle East, the petrodollar. And today there are so many dollars out there, either in banks or in investments, that this is the real driver for the tremendous inflation that we've had. Since 1965, the U.S. dollar has inflated to the point where it's lost 80% of its value. We're still in a hyperinflation, and the housing inflation is part of that, and people just can't keep up. So all of these big macroeconomic issues are very, you know, they're kind of the ocean that we swim in. You don't even notice it because the fish doesn't notice the water. But it's these big macro monetary issues that create the environment we're in, and the environment we're in now is just totally out of control.
You mentioned petrodollars, and that's kind of an interesting name right now because it appears that maybe some of our enemies are trying to get that changed into petro-yen or petro-something else. Is there any danger of that happening?
Well, it is happening. The euro was not supposed to replace the dollar as a reserve currency. But the dollar has become so weak and the euro so strong that is happening. And the United, you know, some people argue, and there's probably a lot to it, that the real reason for the Iraq war and for the threatening language that we're using with Iran is to keep the status of the dollar as the primary market denominator for petroleum in the Middle East. There's a lot of truth to that. But yeah, the dollar is eroding, and other countries are very uneasy about having all of the dollars they're holding watching the value go down, and it's a very serious concern. It's very destabilizing.
Well, if someone's to benefit from all this, a collapse of the American economy and all, who is it?
Well, in the near term, the people who will benefit will be the ones who still have the ability to buy devalued assets. Like, for example, if you have a city, and again, I'm referring to Atlanta because I saw this on TV. In Atlanta, a whole lot of people have gone into foreclosure. And so when their houses go into foreclosure, the value of the house goes down to whatever its market value is, probably down even further than that. So you've got a bargain basement, fire sale type situation. Now, they auction these houses literally on the courthouse steps. And when they do that, all kinds of people show up with money to buy those houses. They can be banks, you know, the bank or the mortgage company can try to buy it. An investment company that has private equity investors can try to buy it. Some rich guy who owns 10 houses and wants another one can buy it. So in the short term, the people who have ready cash are the ones who are going to come out and try to buy these things, including people who can use their cash to leverage bank loans. So even when the economy's coming down, the bank is still going to be out there lending money because they'll get what they can out of it. It's not their money they're lending. It's money they create out of the thin air, out of their fractional reserve privileges. So you've got a huge predatory economy out there ready to leap. And that's why I cited Carlyle. I mean, the head of Carlyle, multi-billion-dollar firm, they've got money in their pockets. They've got people who have liquid investments that they can liquidate and come up with ready cash. And then they can use that to leverage more loans. They're the ones who are going to try to buy up businesses, properties, industries as their value collapses. This has been going on since the 80s, and it's still going on, and people are getting ready for it to happen again. I mean, the banks have been hiring foreclosure specialists just to manage these kinds of situations.
I know one. And there's, for companies like Carlyle and their ilk, there's no nationalism involved in this anymore, is there?
Absolutely not.
No.
Yeah. No,
on the world scale, countries, talking about countries, is there any country as a whole that tends to benefit from this? The Chinese, for example, are they flush with cash?
China has $1 trillion just sitting there. And one of the things they've done with this, I don't know if I've mentioned it yet on this program, I don't remember, but you may have read that China is now investing in Africa in a big way. They are replacing the International Monetary Fund as the institutional lender of choice among African nations because China doesn't put any strings attached on it. They just come in and lend money, and then, of course, they get privileges in terms of purchasing petroleum or other resources. The same thing is happening in Latin America. Russia is another country that's turned around economically and is starting to invest in other countries. So, yeah, the big winners right now are, as they've been for quite a while, the oil-rich countries, you know, the Dubai, United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia. They've always had money to invest, and of course Saudi Arabia has been a big player in the Carlyle situation.
Certainly. And it pays the Chinese in their quest for resources now, oil in particular. It certainly pays them to ingratiate themselves to the oil producing nations of the country, particularly the smaller ones. They're going to want great relations with countries. Well, they're going to want to outbid Americans for oil. That's it, plain and simple.
Yes.
Richard, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. I wish we had hours and hours to discuss this. I could certainly talk to you that long. The listeners are enjoying the conversation, and you've brought great insight into this, although I think in one way we've barely touched it. I'd like to reserve the right to have you on again some of these days and go over some more of this. I found your article just absolutely fascinating. It's something, like I said, it's a bit depressing, but it's also something everybody needs to have their eyes wide open and read. It's on Global Research. And your website?
www.richardccook.com.
RichardCCook.com. Okay. Well, I hope everybody will check. And you've got a book, right?
I'm working on a monetary book, yeah. Now, it will be a compilation of the published articles plus some new material. That's in the works.
Okay. Well, look forward to that. And I might mention to all the listeners, as you can tell by the conversation with Richard, he's many people that are into subject like this are so dry and boring. He doesn't write that way, nor does he talk that way. He keeps it interesting, and it's a great read, and you'll all enjoy it very, very much. And be sure and do Google Global Research and check it out there as well. Richard, thank you so much for being on the program.
Okay, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, well, well. I could talk to him all day long. It's one of my favorite subjects. It's something that we're all going to need to talk about. It's something we're all going to have to face. It's something we are facing right now as a nation. many of us are facing it individually. People have mortgage problems. People have job problems, income problems, insurance problems. I did grow up at a time in this country where we were, emerging as the great power, you might say, the great financial power of the world. We had been for some time, but we were not vulnerable. And now we are. We're losing jobs. Many people losing their homes, losing their income, losing their livelihood, losing their retirement. And it's something we all need to sit back and take a close look at. And I apologize to everybody that I didn't get your questions in that you wanted answered. I've got a bunch of them through email here and just didn't have time to get to them. So next time. Anyway, we're going to pause for news right now. I understand that we are late, but we'll do the news and we'll be back right after a break.
News brought to you by INN World Report.
Nearly 12% of Army recruits in basic training this year had criminal records, a dramatic increase over last year and more than twice the percentage 4 years ago. They were given a special waiver. USA Today revealed years before the Iraq War began, Pentagon officials knew of the effectiveness of a type of vehicle that better shielded troops from bombs like those that have killed 1,500 soldiers and Marines. But military officials repeatedly balked at appeals to provide the life-saving, mine-resistant, ambush-protected vehicle.
For more breaking news and exclusive interviews, go to our website, INNWorldReport.net.
The dollar was driven down against the Japanese yen Tuesday, hit by the news that Iran had asked Japan to pay for its oil purchases in yen and not in dollars. Japan's oil payments to Iran rose 12% last year to $10 billion. Iran has been deliberately moving its exposure to the dollar and dollar-based assets, faced with the threat that the U.S. could freeze its U.S.-based dollar accounts in response to its nuclear plans. Three big oil-producing nations, Iran, Venezuela, and Russia, have all been moving much of their foreign currency reserves from dollars to euros in recent months. The latest move can only add to the long-term pressure on the dollar, already hit by worries about the U.S. economy, based on the crisis in the subprime mortgage market.
According to the Guardian newspaper, the White House favors military action against Iran before George Bush leaves office in 18 months. The Guardian says although the Bush administration is in deep trouble over Iraq, it remains focused on Iran. The White House claims that Iran is intent on building a nuclear weapon and is arming insurgents in Iraq and Afghanistan. Dick Cheney favors upping the threat of military action against Iran. He is being resisted by Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Defense Secretary Robert Gates. A well-placed Washington source said Bush and Cheney did not trust any potential successors in the White House, Republican or Democrat, to deal with Iran decisively. They are also reluctant for Israel to carry out any strikes because the U.S. would be blamed anyway. Almost half of the U.S.'s 277 warships are stationed close to Iran.
James Show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life! Life, you hear me? Give my creation life!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Get calmed down.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you've read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey, welcome back to the show. Glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Of course, you can participate, as we always say, by giving us a call at 866-546-5254 if you'd like to comment on what we're talking about today. And I want to thank Richard Cook once again for a great interview. I really enjoyed talking to him, and we'll have him on again some of these days. Financial matters here in this country and the economy here and around the world are a subject near and dear to my heart, and I know to a lot of you as well. And he does do that without it becoming boring, and he does a great job with it. I was looking at a couple of things during the news there, and it just makes me so damn mad. The Republicans trying to spin, the hypocritical bastards that they are, trying to spin things from last night. It's fascinating to me how they were accusing the Democrats while they were in the majority, while the Republicans were in the majority. They accused the Democrats of being obstructionists on the Supreme Court nominations, for example. And threatened to pull out what they called the nuclear option, said they'd do it. And yet, on everything that's come up that's been of great importance to this country, to this nation, to the future, and to the present of this country, everything that's come up that's been important for the first 7 months of this Democratic Congress, they have obstructed every single thing and made forced the 60 vote margin on there. Everything. And yet they stand there at, the hypocrisy is just appalling. If you're on the right, do you not see this? Do you not see the dripping hypocrisy coming off of these people on almost every issue nowadays? The Law and Order Party, the Family Values Party. You know, the Alberto Gonzalez thing, and we're talking about law and order. They don't give a damn about law and order. The Family Values, the Vitters case recently, they don't give a damn about family values. Give me a break. They do not care. They don't give a damn about being obstructionist. They don't give a damn how many of our soldiers get killed or how much of our treasure is spent on that war. And they stand there and defend it. And there is no defense of this. There is no defense. You heard our guest yesterday. I had somebody send me an email that just made me want to... In fact, I got several emails from several on the program because of the program yesterday, because of the guest, the freelance reporter that we had from Baghdad on the program yesterday, telling how things in Baghdad are. And let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. The gentleman we had on the program yesterday is as apolitical as you can get. Believe me when I tell you that. Is not interested in politics whatsoever. and have people writing and say, oh, how do I know he was telling the truth? For Christ's sake, he is there. He gave you a first-hand report, not only from his eyes, but from talking to actual citizens of Iraq. And so I get a half a dozen emails say, oh, I just talked to somebody that returned from Iraq, and they said everything's great. That there's a lot of progress here, and there's a lot of progress there, and there's kids going to school, and the clinics are open. And oh, please give me a break. How goddamn stupid do you think I am? Just because Lindsey Graham and John McCain go over there and come back and say, hey, you know, you can walk through the neighborhoods. Just great. It's just great. Oh, yes, there's progress to be made, but we've made great progress. We've made great stuff. We're starting to hear this all the time now. Oh, yes, we're making great progress. General Petraeus is... General Petraeus might be the greatest general that ever lived. I don't know. I'm going to reserve judgment on that. But he's also facing one of the toughest military problems that there ever has been on this facing this country, that's for sure. In the past, if we're in some sort of a military conflict, we just bring all of our military might to bear and get it over with when we're right, when we're on the right side of things, and get it over with and get out. Now, what do you do? The nukes don't do you any good. The F-16s don't do you much good. The fancy weapons don't do you much good. This is hand-to-hand combat, for all intents and purposes. And then you got guys like Lindsey Graham and John McCain. Well, you know, we were there, and there's a... Don't send me any more email like that. Please don't insult me. Or don't make yourself look foolish. Well, I just talked to somebody that came back, and they said, things are really improving, really improving. You know, Chris Matthews had a guy on his show last night that's, a returning veteran, and thank you for your service, returning veteran. I appreciate that. We all do. Appreciate your courage in being in the military and going over there and fighting and doing what your superiors have asked you to do. But man, oh man, don't come home and tell us how great things are when somewhere I've got... What did I do with it here? And my stack of stuff today. I've got military.com. Okay? This is from military.com. Don't anybody tell me that, I talked to I don't want an isolated incident of I talked to one soldier and he said things were fine. I don't want to hear it. Here's an article from military.com. A recent military.com poll posed this question: when should American troops withdraw from Iraq? The response from readers was noteworthy. 42% of the 5,440 respondents chose the answer worded now. 42% said now. We're wasting lives and resources. And another 17% chose the end of 2008. That's plenty of time. Added together, the results show 59% of those who responded were either for an immediate withdrawal or a precipitous pullout within the next year. So don't give me the anecdotal stories about I talked to, Junior's cousin down the road who came home and said, oh, things are really great. Listen, I understand this. I understand that a soldier, a young man, a young woman coming home from that conflict, having been over there for 3-4 years, I don't know how many tours. I understand where you would want to feel that you had made some progress while you were there. I understand that you would come home and want to think in your heart of hearts that you had done some good for somebody. I understand that. I think we all do. But the sad fact is, you have to face the reality of the situation sooner or later and understand that we have done nothing for the people of Iraq. Nothing. Oh, yeah, Saddam's dead. Talk to a lot of people over there now. They'd like to have him back. It's that bad. Yes, he was a bad man. Yes, he pulled off a lot of atrocities. But my God, look what's happened there since he's fallen from power. And don't come back and say, oh, guy, you must think of Saddam. No, I don't think it was a good thing having Saddam in power. I'm saying that if they felt they must topple him from power, they botched this as bad as you can possibly botch anything. And they're sitting there now trying to defend their actions. And I'm not buying it. And about 70% of the American people aren't buying it anymore either. Now are they? The ones who can think for themselves. The ones who can see the actual evidence and not be blinded by some political ideology. And you know, it's particularly galling to me that many of you on the right to send me the dirty emails and so forth are completely blinded by ideology, and that Junior can do no wrong, the Republicans can do no wrong, the Republican senators can do no wrong, nobody on the right can do anything wrong. Hey, listen. This program is objective. When the left does something wrong, when the Democrats do something wrong, we say it. We admit it. How can you have any credibility left if you don't? That's all I'm saying. We're going to take a break. Be back in a minute.
Here's the guy changing the way you hear music, Billy Shears.
Join us this Saturday night at 9 p.m. for Night Sounds, for an evening of music and more. And stop by the head-on chat room. I'll be there. Will you?
Whenever darkness is falling, you know the spirit of the party starts to come alive. Feel the day.
For you, Saturday night. Be there.
I, Richard Cheney, do solemnly swear that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I'm about to enter. So help me God.
Impeach Cheney, Article 1. Cheney has purposely manipulated the intelligence process by fabricating a threat of Iraqi weapons of mass destruction.
He has aggressively sought to acquire chemical, biological, and nuclear weapons.
Death on a massive scale.
He is using his procurement system to acquire the equipment he needs in order to enrich uranium to build a nuclear weapon.
Continuing chemical and biological weapons research.
That he is, in fact, actively and aggressively seeking to acquire nuclear weapons.
Simply stated, there is no doubt that Saddam Hussein now has weapons of mass destruction. There is no doubt that he is amassing them to use against our friends, against our allies, and against us.
Vice President Richard B. Cheney, in violation of his constitutional duty, has purposely manipulated the intelligence process to deceive the citizens and the Congress of the United States.
Impeach Cheney, Article 2. Cheney has purposely manipulated the intelligence process by fabricating relations between Iraq and Al-Qaeda.
There clearly was a relationship in Iraq on the one hand and the Al-Qaeda organization on the other.
It's been testified to. The evidence is overwhelming.
That there have been a number of contacts over the years. We've seen in connection with the hijackers, of course, Mohammed Atta.
It's high-level contacts between Osama bin Laden and Iraqi intelligence officials.
Vice President Richard B. Cheney, in violation of his constitutional duty, has purposely manipulated the intelligence process to deceive the citizens and the Congress of the United States.
impeach Cheney, Article 3. Cheney has openly threatened aggression against the Republic of Iran, undermining the national security of the United States.
We'll stand with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating this region.
Iran, astride the world supply of oil, prepared to use terrorist organizations for their nuclear weapons to threaten their neighbors. It's important that that not happen.
Is there realistically a military solution?
We haven't taken any options off the table.
We'll stand with others to prevent Iran from gaining nuclear weapons and dominating this region.
Vice President Richard B. Cheney, in violation of his constitutional duty, has openly threatened aggression against the Republic of Iran, undermining the national security of the United States.
Impeach Cheney for high crimes and misdemeanors. ImpeachCheney.org.
And we're back here on the Guy James Show. Damn, it makes me mad every time I hear Dick Cheney say that. Oh, you know, there were documented contacts over the years with Saddam Hussein and Al-Qaeda or bin Laden. And hey, there are documented contact between Manuel Noriega and Bush Daddy. There were documented contact between the bin Laden family and the Carlyle Group and Bush Daddy. Documented contact between a lot of world leaders back and forth. What does that mean? It just means that I'm trying to scare the hell out of you. That's what. I'm lying my ass off to scare you, but I'm going to do it because I'm Dick Cheney. Yeah. Can't stand that man. Cannot stand that man. Let me say that again. I cannot stand that man. 866-546-5254. I guess I got my point across. You're welcome to give us a call, and let's go to the phone. We got Dave from California. Hi, Dave.
Hey, Guy. I've shared a lot of my thinking with you over the years, but I think it's something that I keep connecting these dots, and it always, for me, comes out that this administration is completely in the business of taking from the have-little people and giving it to the have-more and have even more than that. And this war is, for them, very, very profitable. Botched, yes, it's in the way that they don't care how many people get hurt or how much harm is being done, as long as they're grabbing great wealth for themselves.
You're right, Dave. Botched is only from our angle. From their angle, they don't give a damn.
Right, right. They're not handling it very competently, that's for certain sure. But right now, they're sending out notifications, and they've started doing it, and I'm one of them, and that is taking big deductions out of our Social Security check, because they truly feel the poor have too much, and the very rich have nowhere near enough, and so they're staying with it.
Well, you know, Dave, they always say that the poor in this country aren't really poor, because after all, they have automobiles and color TVs, so how poor are they? That's their answer.
Well, try to see what they can do to end that.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. They are just shockingly immoral. I mean, there's just no other way to put it.
One of the things maybe you could help to clarify, because I have the feeling also that some of the big lobbyists, and in particular I would say AIPAC, which is the pro-war Jewish lobby, they put a lot of money in the pockets of a lot of members of Congress, and they're happy with what's going on. Many of them would like to see a whole lot of Muslims being killed. And
absolutely. Absolutely.
These Congress members that are talking like how much they really want to get us out of the war but vote quite the opposite, I keep wondering, why? What's the matter? You have no insight? I think they do, but I think they know who's buttering their bread, and they're afraid to alienate somebody that could give it to his opponent, you know?
That's right, and if you're in Congress, that buttered bread is everything to you. You'll do anything to keep it, and they do.
including losing your constituency. That's happening, I think. Most people look at Congress now and give them an even lower rating.
Oh, did you see Arlen Specter today go off on Harry Reid when Harry Reid said that, you know, he said something about Arlen Specter, bet I know what the great percentage of people in Pennsylvania want as far as this war, and Arlen Specter, you know, come back later and say, how does he know what goes on in Pennsylvania? I'm the senator from Pennsylvania. I know what goes on. Well, hey, Arlen, I'm sorry, but we do know that 70% of the people in Pennsylvania are against this war.
That's the same Harry Reid that just once again said impeachment is not a consideration.
That's exactly right. Well,
the worst group of criminals you could ever fear to have in your White House.
I still think we can push them towards it, though. I thought that last night was a little bit of a foot in the door for us, that we put on enough political pressure that Reid felt he had to do that. Now, if we keep it up to him and to Conyers and to Nancy Pelosi, maybe, just maybe, we can force them into an impeachment. I'm hoping that that's the case.
Well, I stay with my efforts, and I know you do as well, Guy.
Absolutely, every single day. Thank you, Dave. Good to hear
Thank
from
you,
you.
Sir.
Heard something last night. Actually, it was today. That you don't often hear. In fact, I was kind of taken aback by it, I must admit. I heard Larry Flynt say that he was shocked. Now, knowing a little bit about Larry Flynt, there can't be a whole lot Larry Flynt is shocked about. But he said he's shocked at one of the senators going to be named as part of the D.C. Madam scandal. Who could it be? Let's be real salacious here, and we ought to get a pool up or something. Let's be salacious here and speculate who it might be, or who do you want it to be? Yeah, let's get really mean about it. How about Orrin Hatch? Oh, that would be sweet for me. That would be good. Of course, McConnell. Yeah, that would be very good too for me. Jim Bunning. Oh yeah, I would like that. And actually, I can think of several more I'd like it to be, but actually no one more than Joe Lieberman, but it's highly unlikely it's Joe Lieberman because I'm sure that Lieberman was thoroughly vetted during his vice presidential run in 2000, and somehow, I don't know, I just can't see Joe Lieberman going in and say, well, ma'am, here's $20, give me a... I just can't see Joe Lieberman doing that. I could be wrong. I could be wrong. But who do you think it'll be? I mean, it could be a Democrat. And if it is, fine. So be it. I'd be disappointed. And if it is a Democrat, I'd probably say, and if he was my senator, for example, I'd be saying, hey, bub, how about resigning? I would. Oh, yes, I would. Unlike Mr. Vitters, who publicly called for the resignation of Mr. William Jefferson Clinton, because of his little dalliance with the girl in the blue dress. But evidently Mr. Vitters has had a change of heart since that time. How many of you watched that debate all night last night? Come on, admit it. How many of you were as foolish as I was? Huh? How many of you did it? And, you know, Arlen Specter, I keep going back to him. I can't stand Arlen Specter. I wrote down a couple of things, quotes of Arlen Specter from this morning, actually. He said, last night's performance made us the laughingstock of the world. It was insulting and it was meaningless. I got news for you, Arlen. You've been the laughingstock of the world for a hell of a long time now. A long time. Have you seen the polls lately, Arlen? You are and have been for quite a while now the laughingstock. And it was insulting and meaningless, Arlen? What you guys have been doing for the last 7 months, and in fact, last several years, is insulting to the American public. And how about that Saxby Chambliss getting up and talking about the troops? I don't know what it is about Saxby Chambliss. I just can't stand him. Just can't stand him. Well, I guess you've heard. And, you know, you've heard me criticize him many times on the program before, but... Joe Biden, I thought, made a pretty powerful speech today. He really did. And Joe can speak. Let me make that clear. I think Joe Biden, when he puts his mind to it, can stand up and deliver a great speech. And he did today. And he says it's going to end in a disaster. And he's predicting it's going to end up in a disaster with helicopters picking people off the roofs in Iraq, just like we did in Vietnam. He said that today. Oh, boy. And how about the Harriet Myers thing? Have you been keeping up with that? She says, up yours to the Judiciary Committee again. And the White House, well, everybody knows, I think, by now. The White House has got the Democrats right where they want them, and both sides know that. They know, first of all, if they do cite her for contempt, if they do subpoena her, you know, they've already, you know, so what? So what? It's going to go to a federal court to pass it on to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's going to vote 5-4 for the administration. They know that. They know that. And I know a lot of you either heard the report or read the NIE report of yesterday. And man, I got to tell you, from my listeners, the email I get, you guys are really, really well informed. I'm very proud of that. My audience is extremely well informed, and I that's important to me. It really is. But I know a lot of you heard the report or read the report from the NIE yesterday, the National Intelligence Estimate. And I think after reading it, I think Bush's new mantra should be something like, we got to make them over there so we can fight them over here. Because that's kind of what the situation is. We got new Al-Qaeda fighters by the thousands ready to pounce on us here in the homeland, and I'm getting sick of hearing that. The homeland. Why can't they say here in the United States, here in America, here in our country? The homeland. That's reminiscent of something that the dark, dark past of this world that I'd just rather not use that term. And you've got people like Rick Santorum and Tom DeLay out speaking of how we're going to get hit again. First of all, does anyone doubt that we're going to get hit again? Of course we're going to get hit again. And secondly, do these guys have to sound so desperate for it to happen? And yes, it does sound like they can't wait for it to happen again, so that in Santorum's words, and he did say this, George will look like a very wise president. George Bush will look like a very wise president. Listen, Ricky boy, George Bush wouldn't look like a very wise president if he could read all of the words in my pet goat without fudging the words he couldn't pronounce. Never. The homeland, Al-Qaeda, 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 Al-Qaeda. And I made a note to myself. All I had to do was write down one word. Inhofe. Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma. It's all Clinton's fault. Heard him talking today. It's all Clinton's fault, the whole thing. They need more ships. Yeah, we need more ships. He was pissing and moaning because Clinton cut back the size of the Navy from, what was it, 600 to 300 ships? I forget what the number was. But we need more ships. That's the answer. We need more ships, and because Clinton cut those ships back, why, that's why we're having such a difficult time. That was the rationalization of the brilliant Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma. Is there something in the water in Oklahoma? How is it that they can produce such idiots? United States Senator idiots from there. How is it they can do that? I would be so damn embarrassed to have that Inhofe as my senator. I would, oh my God. But if they're in fact proud of him, and they pulled the lever for him, ooh, that says something about the big old panhandle state out there now, doesn't it? He says that since there's such great progress taking place in Iraq, the left is in a state of panic. said a vote to end the war would be a slap in the face of our forces. And he also said, thank God, yes, he did say this, thank God the troops have Fox News to watch now instead of CNN. That's the same United States senator that said on the Senate floor a while back, never in the history of my family has there been a homosexual or a divorce, and I'm very proud of that. As I've said before, somebody send me his family tree, and let's take a closer look. If there was ever a reason to believe in evolution. And I know he does not. And I know most of the people that probably voted for him do not believe in evolution. But my God, if there was ever a reason to believe in evolution, there it is right there. Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma. Yes, sir. Like to have something a little light every day. I'm going to try and make it a permanent part of the show, something to lighten things up just a little bit. I admire that about Michael Moore's work. No matter how serious his films are, he always throws a little levity in there in the middle someplace to kind of give everybody a breather for a moment. I ran across this story on The Wire today. Psycho girlfriend wields baseball bat and lighter fluid. Today's psycho girlfriend story comes from Lincoln County, Missouri, where 30-year-old Jessica Bressy, I guess would be better to say it, is sitting behind bars following a bizarre attack on her boyfriend. Police say the incident began when Bressy began arguing with Damon Akers about their children's behavior. Deputies say that when Akers attempted to leave in his vehicle, Bressy smashed in the rear driver's side window with a baseball bat. Now you think, well, okay, I've seen that one before. Well, when Akers got out of his car, Bressy struck him with the bat several times. You might say, okay, I've seen that one several times before. Police say Bressy then soaked Akers with a can of lighter fluid and began chasing him with a cigarette lighter, threatening to set him on fire. When a sheriff's deputy arrived, Bressy ran into the house and tried to retrieve a weapon from the kitchen. She struck the officer several times before he managed to slap handcuffs on her. She faces numerous charges, including first-degree assault. Well, I guess that's the old irreconcilable differences story, right? They've got differences. He wants to live and she wants to kill him. I guess that's... Man, oh man, oh man. Buddy, when she gets out of jail, you better get yourself a bus ticket and take off for somewhere. That lighter fluid thing, that bothers me. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. What do we had something here we wanted to play for you today, and I forget. Let's hear from Holy Joe Lieberman.
Some have said that this is the only amendment with teeth. It does have teeth, but I think we've got to ask who does it bite? I think it bites our hope for success in Iraq. It bites our troops.
You bite,
as
Joe.
They proceed day in and day out courageously, compassionately, effectively. It bites our hope for keeping al-Qaeda and Iran out of controlling Iraq. This amendment mandates a retreat.
And the esteemed
Senator
Jim Bunning.
To the brave men and women in our armed forces and to the American taxpayer that we are here tonight for no other reason than for a publicity stunt.
This president will not take advice unless forced to change course.
Well, Chuck, I heartily agree with you on that. Chuck Schumer there. And what do we had? One more here. This is from one of my favorite guys. Don't tell me I lost it here. I think I might have. Well, have to do that tomorrow, maybe. Senator Bunning, Chuck Schumer. Oh, all right. Yeah, here's from one of my favorite senators, Senator Sherrod Brown. I know Sherrod Brown, and heck of a guy, and I think he's going to be a great United States senator.
We want to end this war. We want to redeploy American soldiers and Marines out of Iraq as safely and as quickly in the most orderly way possible. Unfortunately, the president hasn't listened to the voters, hasn't listened to the Iraq study group, hasn't even listened to his military advisors, and simply wants to stay the course on this war. We're in session all night tonight because it's important to convince the Republicans to vote up or down, to give us an opportunity to debate this, to give us an opportunity to vote to end this war so that we can redeploy our troops out of Iraq. It's what the American public's asked for. It's what this Senate needs to do.
Saturday evening, July 21st, because at 9 p.m. until midnight Eastern, Billy Shears will be right here on the head-on radio network, The Horn. You're going to just love Night Sounds. We'll have plenty of great music and more. So, is it a date? We'll be waiting for you. Saturday night, July 21st.
Hey, that sounds like Sharon, don't you think? Yeah, that sounds like Sharon Osbourne. It really does. Billy, did you get Sharon Osbourne to do that? I like her. I do. I think she's cool, to use that word. Music director of the Guy James Show, Billy Shears. Terrific new program starting out Saturday night. Be there or be square, as we used to say. Hey, I want to bring up, and I know this is a little bit off the subject, but I wanted to bring up the best example of the old adage, a picture's worth a thousand words, that I think I've ever seen. And actually, this picture was worth several thousand words to me. Did you see the picture of terrific Tommy Tancredo, Republican candidate for the presidency, standing there all by himself on the stage at the NAACP convention last week? Did you see that? They had lecterns set up for however many Democratic candidates there are. What are there, 9 or what, 10? I forget. And they had that many lecterns set up. And they had them set up for the Republicans to show up as well, because there's an equal number of them, I believe. But only one showed up, and that was Tommy Tancredo. And, you know, good old Tommy Tancredo. He may hate Hispanics, but at least he had the guts to show up at the NAACP convention last week. And yep, the only Republican candidate to show up. And that picture was worth 100,000 words. And I guess the others were just playing to their base, which by and large wants nothing to do with minorities of any kind. Let's face it. You know it. I know it. Everybody knows it. And I'm sure the Republicans realize, why should we bother? The NAACP already knows that the Republicans have done nothing for civil rights in this country and never will. So why go and get booed? So you see, what Tommy Tancredo should have done, and I was thinking about this, what he should have done was to charter a bus, and he should have driven over to Capitol Hill, and he should load up all the black Republican representatives and senators, and then go to the convention. Oh, that's right, I forgot. There are no black Republican senators or members of the House. What was I thinking? I bet he wouldn't have had any trouble filling up the bus with Republicans willing to attend the KKK convention, though. Not fair, you say? Maybe not. Maybe not. But again, is it just a coincidence that there are no black Republican members of Congress? Just a coincidence? I don't think so. I don't think so. Oh, you're going to hate me for that. I don't care, but it's the truth. And if it's not the truth, if there are a whole busload of Republican black representatives and from the House or the Senate, please send me their names and their pictures and all, and I'll be glad to say that I was wrong. I will publicly say how wrong I was. But you and I both know I'm not going to have to do that, am I? Of course not. Not now. Maybe never, if you guys keep up with the same policies that you've been having for such a long time. That's right. And hey, what's up with this? We got the Cirrus Satellite Radio. And the liberal channel is called Cirrus Left. Cirrus Left. And the conservative channel is called Cirrus Patriot. So evidently, all my friends on the left, Cirrus Satellite doesn't think you're patriotic. And I think that's an obscenity. And so here's my suggestion. I think everybody that thinks they're from the left and they are patriots and that's wrong, I think that you should call the Cirrus Media Relations representative and talk to the lady there. Her name is Hillary Schumpf. Hillary Schumpf. And her email is HSCHUPF. Schumpf. I like saying that. Schumpf. HSCHUMPF at SiriusRadio.com. And if you'd like to call her and raise an objection, her phone number is 212-901-6739. So be sure and do that. Yeah, the channel on the right for the conservatives is called Sirius Patriot, and the liberal channel is just called Sirius Left. Why does that not surprise me at all? And we have information here. We've been giving these stats here the past few days. 45% of all foreign militants targeting U.S. troops and Iraqi civilians and security forces are from Saudi Arabia. 45%. 15% are from Syria and Lebanon, and 10% are from North Africa, according to official U.S. military figures. Those are not my figures. Those are U.S. military figures, and I think they should relate those to the White House, because the White House does need a better understanding of those numbers. 45% of all foreign militant targets, U.S. troops, are from Saudi Arabia. I can see Tony Snow right now. No, they're not. They're all Al-Qaeda. We don't care where they're from. They're all Al-Qaeda. 100% of them, all Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. Eat, sleep, and dream, Al-Qaeda. They're after us, I tell you. Man, oh man. Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda. They've got a product to sell, and they're in the process of selling it. Make no mistake about that. They're doing their best to try and sell this war so that they can hang on a little bit longer. Just a little bit longer. If we can just hang on a little bit longer, our friends over at Halliburton and Bechtel and KBR, they can make a few extra bucks. That's the ticket, yeah. Hey, I'm awfully glad you joined us here on the Guy James Show today. I really am. I see a lot of folks didn't pay any heed to what I said yesterday about perhaps contributing to the show. Maybe a lot of folks didn't hear that part. But let me reiterate that this is a donor-supported show, and we hope you'll consider doing so at TheGuyJamesShow.com. Please do. It's, like I said yesterday, a matter of some urgency. I wasn't kidding. Hey, thanks for being with us here on The Guy James Show today. Proud member of the Head On Radio Network. Stay tuned for Mark Levine. Always an interesting show from an interesting guy. Mark Levine, well-connected, good broadcaster. Don't forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. See you tomorrow, gang.